The Deists and the Law of Actors. When the Deists expressed the words, "The laws of nature and nature's God," they understood the law of three as manifest in the divine pattern of creation, as well as the law of octaves, which holographically is embedded throughout every aspect of all that exists. When deism is portrayed as deism, is the standpoint that reason and observation of the natural world, without the need for organized religion, can determine that a supreme being created the universe. See deism. It was because the American Gnostics, who were deists, understood the higher reality of the laws when overcome is a harnessing of the laws within one's own mind and being that, in the above words of Uspensky, makes books and libraries entirely unnecessary. Why would overcoming the laws within oneself render books and libraries entirely unnecessary? Those who overcome the laws and emerge out of what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being, or the illusions of Plato's cave, are able to see and understand all things for what they truly are, and are thus travailing the path of the soul's journey of enlightenment. And one of the primary concerns of our deist constitutional framers was creating an environment where the natural laws of God could function at a higher level and permit the people to evolve to their higher potential that organic man simply could not even begin to comprehend. Though the pattern of the law of three and the law of octaves is holographically present throughout all of creation, it is perhaps easiest to see, hear, and observe in music. Again, let me stress the fact that while the manifest laws at work can be demonstrated more easily in music, its far-reaching reality is prevalent throughout all aspects of life in this world and beyond. The only difference, then, is that the same sequence of law is more difficult to observe throughout the other aspects of life, but quickly becomes apparent once one is cognizant of the pattern and sequence. The same pattern that is found in music has been noted in what is known as Newland's Law of Octaves, that is related to the arrangement of elements in the periodic table. If elements are arranged in the order of their atomic weights, the eighth element starting from a given one is a kind of repetition of the first. It is said that once Pythagoras recognized the relationship of music and math and established music as an exact science, Pythagoras then applied his law of harmonic intervals to all the phenomena of nature. He went so far as to demonstrate the harmonic relationship of the planets, constellations, and elements to each other. If we look at the picture of a typical keyboard, what we see is the whole notes represented in the white keys and the half tones in the black keys. Regardless of the fact of whether we understand music or not, what we should quickly recognize is the easily discernible fact that not every whole note interval has a half tone. Why? Why isn't there a half tone between the third and fourth note on the keyboard and musical scale? Also, why isn't there a half tone between the seventh and eighth note of a musical scale? Though the answer is very simple, the reality that is portrayed is so esoteric and beyond physical reality as we know it, that the most accomplished musicians cannot supply you with the answer to the enigma, an enigma that is holographically true of all laws and envelops every aspect of our lives and creation. Man's physical body is programmed for his spiritual failure. Our physical body is of the earth, that therefore is not a vehicle that is the natural environment of man's higher soul and spiritual natures. What this means is that if we are to manifest our higher natures and rise above the inherent carnal limitations of our physical body / vessel, we will be required to make a conscious effort, even a superconscious effort, as we endeavor to overcome the laws that are the ruling forces of this natural world. Once again, our physical body is comprised of earth matter and is not naturally acclimated to support man's higher aspects of mind and being. And this is the reason why Paul warns that the natural mind of man cannot even begin to perceive or comprehend the higher reality of the soul and spiritual natures. See Mystery of the Gospel, judging and rejecting these higher truths as utter foolishness and even heresy. that the physical body and mind must be purifying and transformed in order to gain access to those higher areas of mind that are able to perceive and comprehend man's higher soul and spiritual reality. And the fact that this transformational process requires much effort and work on oneself is portrayed in the words of the disciples where they stated, "We must through many tribulations enter the kingdom of God." Acts 14:22 NKJ. If we are therefore bound to this physical realm by the natural laws, then it is of the utmost importance for us to be cognizant of the effects of the law as they interact with every aspect of nature and life. If we pose the question, is man's physical body imbued with the laws that inhibit him from fulfilling his spiritual goals? As we look around us at the natural world, it is important that we be cognizant of the fact that we see the absence of straight lines. The leaves on a tree or plant, the outline of a mountain range, the formation of rocks, as well as the very physical bodies in which we presently dwell. Straight lines do not exist in nature. Why? Because these laws, which we can hear and observe on a keyboard, cause all things to change direction in midstream. In the same way that we cannot clear our minds and focus on a single thought, as we attempt to walk the path of spiritual enlightenment, the laws of this realm will constantly work to lead us off the path to life. Returning once again to the keyboard, starting from the leftmost key, we can see the first note. And between the first and second white keys is a half tone, which is represented by that black key. Thus, the black key represents a half step or half tone between the two white keys, which musicians call a sharp or flat. The same is true with respect to the sequence of the second to third note. Then, between the third and fourth note, the pattern suddenly changes, and we can observe that there is no half tone between these notes. Why? Because when we play the notes, the frequency of the fourth note is actually a half tone, and yet it artificially and falsely sounds to our physical hearing a whole step increment. Why? Why does our ears hear a half tone in the third to fourth sequence as if it is a whole? While this is not true in the first two intervals of an octave, the enigma is caused by a twisting of the frequencies when they are played in sequence. But this twisting is not only true of the musical scale, but is holographically true and representative of a pattern which is indigenous to all such sequences of law throughout all of creation. What this means is that while we can hear this law at work in music and observe this law at work by virtue of the physical placement of the keys on a keyboard, this same pattern remains universal to all the laws that control this world throughout every aspect of our lives. The result is that when we think we are hearing what would be portrayed as a straight linear path, our physical senses are subject to an illusion within the construct of the laws, resulting in the fact that we are inadvertently turned off the linear path without ever realizing that our direction has been altered by the natural sequence of laws which immerse every aspect of this physical realm in what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being, or the illusions of Plato's cave. Returning once again to the keyboard, starting from the leftmost key, we can see the first note, and between the first and second white keys is a half tone, which is represented by that black key. Thus, the black key represents a half step or half tone between the two white keys, which musicians call a sharp or flat. The same is true with respect to the sequence of the second to third note. Then, between the third and fourth note, the pattern suddenly changes, and we can observe that there is no half tone between these notes. Why? Because when we play the notes, the frequency of the fourth note is actually a half tone, and yet it artificially and falsely sounds to our physical hearing a whole step increment. Why? Why does our ears hear a half tone in the third to fourth sequence as if it is a whole? While this is not true in the first two intervals of an octave, the enigma is caused by a twisting of the frequencies when they are played in sequence. But this twisting is not only true of the musical scale, but is holographically true and representative of a pattern which is indigenous to all such sequences of law throughout all of creation. What this means is that while we can hear this law at work in music and observe this law at work by virtue of the physical placement of the keys on a keyboard, This same pattern remains universal to all the laws that control this world throughout every aspect of our lives. The result is that when we think we are hearing what would be portrayed as a straight linear path, our physical senses are subject to an illusion within the construct of the laws, resulting in the fact that we are inadvertently turned off the linear path without ever realizing that our direction has been altered by the natural sequence of laws which immerse every aspect of this physical realm in what Jesus portrayed as the. In the first place, we must understand that an octave is comprised of seven notes or sequences, as is the pattern of the seven colors of the rainbow that make up white light. As the seventh note is stepped into the eighth sequence, the first note of the sequence is double the frequency of the first, and is repeated as one octave higher than the initial note played. What this means is that there are seven notes which complete the sequence before the first note is repeated one octave higher than the first, as in the common musical sequence do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, with the second do being the same note as the first, but only one octave higher. For those who don't understand the musical scale, there is no variableness in the beginning and ending of the first sequence that makes up the octave, because the frequency of the eighth note, which is also expressed in the term do, which commences the next higher octave, is double the frequency of the first do. And this is why whole notes only consist of a repetitive A through G sequence. Limits of the organic mind, linear thought, and fragmentation. While from a human perspective it could be asserted that there is an inherent congenital defect in the hearing of man that causes him to falsely hear the interval between the third and fourth sequences of an octave as if it were a whole step, regardless of the fact that it is a half step in the frequencies of the musical sequence in failing to understand the reality and higher purpose of this long-ignored phenomena, it is as if mankind continues to dwell in a self-imposed dark ages that has gravely inhibited his progress. In fact, all the poverty, all of man's sufferings, violence, conflict, and bestiality that men inflict upon other men is all the result of man's self-imposed ignorance of the knowledge of the laws. On the other hand, mystics and those who have long understood the movement of the laws of creation have known that this interval between the third to fourth sequence is in fact a testing point of the laws, a test for completeness and wholeness to see if we are prepared to move beyond that point in the physical and mental limitations of the body vessel. But it has been virtually impossible for natural organic man to make any real progress beyond the level where he is presently at, because pseudo-intellectuals reject the wisdom that has been presented to them. The biblical authors all warned that man's higher soul and spiritual reality as set forth in what was portrayed as the mysteries of the kingdom of God was beyond the comprehension of organic man in his natural, earthly carnal mindset. See Mystery of the Gospel. And yet, both man's religious and political leaders have long ignored their witness. In the same way that man is deaf and oblivious to the fact that the third to fourth and seventh to eighth sequence of the musical scale that he hears in not a linear progression as he imagines, he in like manner remains oblivious to the fact that both his line of vision and his rational linear thought that he relies upon to evaluate his experiences in this world is subject to the same testing and twisting that is easily demonstrated in his hearing. What this means is that organic man's rational thinking is totally unreliable to evaluate what he sees and evaluates, because what appears to be linear is an illusion that he is not at all even aware of. In the same way that the listener is not aware of the frequency shifts when the notes of an octave is played back to him, and what sounds to his physical ears to be a linear incremental progression is not at all true, the same is true with respect to both his vision and what he would consider rational thought and reasoning. The result is man's inherent blindness and suppressed rationale that inhibits his ability to properly evaluate what he thinks he sees and understands. Why? Very simply, because of the carnal blindness inflicted upon man by virtue of the organic limitations of the body vessel, and when these natural organic limitations are understood, the reality which confronts man is seen in his inability to grasp only a mere fragment of what he sees and comprehends. And perhaps the perfect example of the problem is presented in a poem by John Godfrey Saxe, which is based upon a fable told in India. It is a good warning about how our inhibited sensory perceptions and limited organic logic can lead to some serious misinterpretations, especially when the investigations of the component parts of a whole and their relations in making up the whole are inadequate and lack coordination. It was six men of Indostan, the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and so these men of Indostan disputed loud and long, each in his own opinion, exceeding stiff and strong, though each was partly in the right, and all were in the wrong. From the enlightened perspective of the mystic, the inherent problem of human blindness is even greater than what is presented in the above fable. The 90th chapter of what is known as the Gospel of the Nazarenes preserves this higher reality that plagues organic physical man. Like the blind men, what is presented in the above gospel quotation is the reality that by law, different men perceive the same truth differently, and that each perception of the one truth is both valid and fragmented. And in understanding the laws and their effects upon organic man, the deist framers of the Constitution ensured that each position based upon each individual man's perception was protected. Our constitutional framers understood that because each man's perception, understanding and mind is segmented, and that in his organic natural condition, each man is only able to see mental forms and allegorical symbols, see above the illusions of the forms of matter that have been impressed into the images of nature, that each individual man's perception is not only representative of a valid perspective, even though it is different than that of other men, but that each man's fragmented perspective is an integral part of the whole. But because each man's perception and understanding is a fragment of the whole, few men possess the intelligent perception to realize the fact that his rational linear reasoning is totally insufficient to evaluate what his very limited perception and organic consciousness is presenting to him. And it was the realization of this reality that organic man was inherently blind to by virtue of the limitations of his physical senses and consciousness. That was expressed in the shock of Einstein, "See Science Proves Religion," when he stated, "All my attempts to adapt the theoretical foundation of physics to this new type of knowledge failed completely. It was as if the ground had been pulled out from under one, with no firm foundation to be seen anywhere upon which one could have built." In much the same fashion, the European physicist Niels Bohr stated that the great extension of our experience in recent years has brought to light the insufficiency of our simple mechanical conceptions and, as a consequence, has shaken the foundation on which the customary interpretation of observation was based, which confirms what Einstein wrote in Analysis, that we may therefore regard matter as being constituted by the regions of space in which the field is extremely intense. There is no place in this new kind of physics both for the field and matter, for the field is the only reality. Quoted in M. Capick, The Philosophical Impact of Contemporary Physics, and the words of physicist Walter Thuring, who wrote that modern physics has put our thinking about the essence of matter in a different context. It has taken our gaze from the visible, the particles, to the underlying entity, the field. The presence of matter is merely a disturbance of the perfect state of the field at that place. Something accidental. One could almost say, a blemish. Accordingly, there are no simple laws describing the forces between elementary particles. Order and symmetry must be sought in the underlying field, Erbostein der Materie. What this means is that only the mystic who has endeavored to consciously develop his latent intuitive spheres of mind possesses the ability to observe and comprehend what man's very fragmented linear rational, intellectual, thinking is totally blind to, which enables the mystic alone to perceive the source and underlying causes in the etheric field that is the source of what man perceives in the forms of matter. Mystics have long warned mankind that the reality of this world of appearances is not at all what it seems to be through the perception of man's physical eyes and senses, that is, that there is a great deal more that man's senses and perception cannot detect or even imagine. And this same enigma of the limits of man's physical senses was noted by Albert Einstein, who concluded with respect to man's dilemma when he stated, The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. And what the mystic has warned is that because man's religious, philosophical, cultural, and educational institutions have created a society that honors the rational servant and has forgotten and suppressed the development of the intuitive gift, thus blinding mankind to the underlying cause of all that man sees and experiences in this world. Man remains perpetually lost and blind in what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being. See outer darkness, or what the philosopher portrayed in the analogy of the illusions of Plato's cave. See cave. When Paul wrote that, see to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world. Call 2, 8 and IV. He was making reference to philosophies, human traditions, and basic principles that were founded upon a linear logic perception and understanding of this world. When Paul warned that the wisdom of this world comes to naught, it was because of the blind illusion of man's linear logic that causes him to arrive at defective assumptions. When the scriptures warn that there is a way that seems right to man, but its end is the way of death, Prov. 14:12. Once again, this warning is based upon the illusions of man's comprehension based upon his dismissal of the intuitive and almost sole reliance on intellectual linear logic. When Paul stated to the congregations that they should take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ, 2 Cor 10:5 NIV, what he was stating was to be totally conscious of the thoughts which are in fact controlled by the law of octaves, to ensure that the thoughts generated make an inner connection between the disciples' lower earthly nature as manifest in the body vessel and their higher spiritual nature that organic man is blind and oblivious to. The developing of the mind through the capturing of one's own thoughts is the basis for the warning of Jesus in the Gospels. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. Matt 12:36 KJV. And that one must overcome the laws working in the body is the reason it is written in the Epistle of James, bridle the whole body, James 3:2 KJV. While this may appear totally alien from the perspective of the modern Christian who fully indulges in the unbounded excesses of our present-day cultural lifestyle, the Apostle Paul confirmed the validity of these words from a new covenant perspective when he wrote of the necessity to beat my body and make it my slave. 1 Cor 9:27 NIV. Moreover, when Paul stated that salvation is by faith over the ritual works of the law of Moses, the reality that faith meant an entirely different thing to the Apostle Paul than what is being preached from our pulpits today can be seen in Paul's commandment to all who would call themselves a Christian to put to death. Therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, call 3, 5 and IV. If the congregation of believers could simply have faith without living a consecrated life set apart from the thinking and lifestyle of the people of this world, then Paul would not have warned the believers of the simple faith that, for if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. Rom 8:13 KJV. To mortify the deeds of the body takes work, a great amount of work, and this work cannot be accomplished through a static faith. The problem is that these biblical commandments have absolutely nothing in common with the doctrine of faith that was developed by Martin Luther in the Middle Ages. In later chapters, I will explore the effect of our modern sexualized culture and its devastating effects upon men and women, which was also warned by Paul in the full statement at Call 3, 5, where he writes, religion is a system of education. How important is the development of the latent intuitive spheres of mind associated with mysticism? What is today known as faith-based religion is portrayed in the Bible as the elementary teachings designed specifically for entry-level congregations of believers. What the Apostle Paul portrayed as the testimony of Christ was set forth to the people he converted as a starting point. And when it is understood that the objectives of the original teachings of the way were in fact parallel to the objectives of our modern educational systems, that is, the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness with the religious objective of attaining the necessary developmental expansion of mind that enables the seeker/disciple to overcome the laws of nature as manifest in the physical body vessel and learn directly from the source of all knowledge, and the objective of learning from the source is in fact the very reason and purpose that all of creation was brought into existence to bring about in the eternal reality of the soul of mankind. Then further comparisons between the purpose of religion and the educational systems of man can be made. If the objective of our educational system is to obtain a university and graduate degree, then the beginning of the educational process starts with preschool or kindergarten and entry-level environment, which is necessary to prepare the student to embrace the process of higher learning. In the same way that you can't enroll an immature student in a college or university, so too must entry-level Christians be exposed one step and level at a time, in a religious-based process that brings about their own spiritual maturity and attainment. And this foundational design and objective of the original teachings of Jesus and the way is explored in the foregoing subheading entitled The Mystery of the Gospel. And it is further demonstrated that the pre-Nicene Church, before 325 CE, very much resembled a spiritual healing center that was totally focused on the objective of the development of the seeker/disciple, one level at a time, of the congregation of believers. See the secret doctrine, where the church was accused of being a secret system that taught the spiritually mature a totally different doctrine than the congregation of believers. And in reply to the allegations against the church by the pagan philosopher Celsus, it was noted that the elementary doctrines which survive today as the foundation of faith-based Christianity was said to be preached in the churches for the simple-minded and for the ears of the common crowd who are led on to live better lives by their belief. Origen contra Celsum. That is, a starting point. So what happened? In the article The Secret Doctrine, the pre-Nicene Church is presented in its finest moments as a three-tier healing system which served the needs of the people at every level of the process. But what happened? In time, the proverbial saying that the inmates took over the institution came to pass, and the charlatan political leaders of the lower echelon put to death the genuine spiritual healers who were the original core and spiritual essence of the church, resulting in the reality that the entry-level beliefs became the only surviving teachings, when the original Ebionite Nazarenes and spiritual Gnostic Christians were hunted down and murdered because they refused to accept the doctrines of the emperor of pagan Rome who ruled over the church beginning in the 4th century. There is a parallel relationship between the original teachings of Jesus and the way, and our modern-day cultural educational systems. When a child is first introduced into the system as an entry-level student, what is presented to the child is a vision of the final result where the graduate student is able to become a doctor, lawyer, engineer, computer programmer, or some other professional. In America, even the thought is presented to the child that they, too, can grow up to be the president. The child is told that if they ardently embrace the objectives of the educational system, prepare their minds through proper study and application, that they can arise and fulfill all cultural expectations and find great success in their lives. In the original teachings of the way, the seeker/disciple was taught that they, too, could mature to the point where they could and would do all that their brother Jesus did. Contrary to pagan church dogma, the original disciples taught that Jesus was justified by fulfilling the law. He was the Christ of God, since not one of the rest of mankind had observed the law completely. Had anyone else fulfilled the commandments of the law, he would have been the Christ. Hence, when a seeker/disciple thus fulfill the law, they are able to become Christ's, for they assert that our Lord himself was a man in like sense with all humanity. Hippolytus Rifat, Alm. Her. 7:34. And that this fact was originally presented in the Gospels is easily proven in the article The Ten Words, which also proves that the deists were correct in their "see above" assertion that the original pure religion had become corrupted by priests who had manipulated it for personal gain and for the class interests of the priesthood in general. From the vision presented to the entry-level student in our own educational systems, the promise of success is never presented from the perspective of the dropout or those who flunk out and fail to take advantage of the learning environment that the educational system provides to the student. It is not at all suggested that you can hang out in school without study and application and collect your university degree by merely putting in your time and going through the motions of attending school. And what is not at all understood today is the fact that the promise of the scriptures is parallel to that of the promise presented to the child who enters our educational system, in that the promise of the scriptures portrays the reality of those who sincerely engage and complete the process of the original objectives of the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness, see separation of church and state, will attain the promised results. And this promise cannot be achieved by those who become spiritual dropouts, that is, "And why call ye me, Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" Luke 6:46 KJV. But as the original teachings became institutionalized under secular control, charlatan priests and clergy, see the example of Paul of Samosata at, peddle dogmatic shortcuts that they seduce the people into believing, which man-made dogma eliminated the need to strive and fulfill the original spiritual objectives of the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness, with a greater number of dogmatic dispensations being invented in order to circumvent the process of higher development, to the degree where the focus of the priests became the dispensing of instant salvation for the purpose of acquiring mammon and the political power over the people. And when the remaining spiritual core of spiritual Christians objected, they were condemned as heretics, hunted down, and murdered. As an example of how the Christian world was literally forced to adhere to the dogma of the secular priests and emperors, when the doctrine of the pre-existent soul was outlawed by the Emperor Justinian, the Britannica confirms that the emperor then forced his will upon the church when he banished the Pope to Egypt, and afterwards to an island, until he accepted the council, which he ultimately did. See. After accepting the decree of the emperor after 7 months of imprisonment on an island, the Pope met with an untimely death. Most of the modern-day doctrines of the church was forced upon the Christian world in this same violent manner, and the vast majority of modern-day beliefs are all victims of what has come to be known as the Stockholm Syndrome. Wise men have long understood that what is holographically true with respect to the unfolding of the sequence of the steps that form an octave in music is in like manner holographically true of all the organic laws of creation, which means that an initial movement in the first sequence, which is portrayed in music as that sequence of do, is automatically checked in the reflection of the second sequence of re, and is tested in the third fourth sequence, which is the fruit of the first and second sequences leading into me, resulting in either a twisting of the sequences in a manner that man's organic senses do not immediately sense and recognize, or the opening of a new door/gate that is beyond the perception of organic man whose efforts remain earthbound in the turning of the sequences. In fact, the senses of man are imbued with a natural progression that is endemic to his being, that is ultimately responsible for his success or failure in any endeavor. The expanse of time, or even the unfoldment of the movement, is all built into the natural progression of the laws. Thus, the time span between the initial movement and the reflective second sequence, which is the initial feedback of the laws, is greatly dependent upon the complexity and proportions of the first cause of the initial movement of the sequence. And this natural progression evolves in the third force, which is the fruit of the two initial sequences. And wise men who understand the laws comprehend that it is at this point where the natural progression is tested and either turned back upon itself in the manner of a person who has arisen to the highest point in his attempt to jump and defy gravity, or, if the organic twisting of the progression of the sequences are overcome, to move onward beyond natural organic physical limitations.